Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile monkeys play. Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile, unpredictable Jacob.
Hey everyone. Hello, this is Jacob. Hey Joe, who do we have as a guest today?
We have Aldo Rall. Aldo, how you doing?
Good, thank you. And you guys?
Yeah, very well.
Good.
Where are you? So we've invited you to talk about something specific, but before we do, where are you hailing from right now?
Well, I used to live in New Zealand for a few years, and earlier this year I found a really nice job in Netherlands. So I'm currently in the Netherlands, working from the central part of the country.
It's fantastic.
Nice. How do we find a change?
I've had a great summer for the first time in many years. I lived in Wellington for a long time, so I've had actually a real summer so far, so I can't complain. Wow. There's a lot. It's just amazing the infrastructure that's here. That's because it caters to such a big audience. There's so many customers for everything here. There's quite a big infrastructure that is quite overwhelming sometimes to see how well and effective it works. So, yeah.
Well, we've invited you here, and this is for our listeners as well, to expand a conversation that started with Lisa Atkins, that eventually went to Joanne Stone, and now has led us to you, which is this concept of agile coaches taking their skill set and putting it into the world to make it a better place. And you were pointed to us by Joanne Stone as a person we should talk to, a must talk to, and here we are today. So tell us a little bit about yourself. In terms of agile, what's your journey been up to now? Who are you?
So I started my career off in IT many years ago, and as the junior developer working in something like FoxPro. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
It's new to me.
That was in the late 90s. I worked as a junior programmer, and then this little thing called Y2K came along, and guess what the senior devs did to me is they dumped all the testing in my lap. And I was responsible for a big government parastatal in South Africa to actually plan and manage and deliver all the testing for all the Y2K across all their computer systems at that time. They were massive users of COBOL, and there was a various spattering of different other technologies as well. So that's where I noticed that in those days, there weren't many information available about testing. So I actually learned by rote how not to do testing, how not to agitate developers, and actually built a whole career in testing for about 18 years from that period. The more I went into the world of testing, I did a lot of contracting. I did a lot of gigs in South Africa and in the UK. I ended up spending 7 years in the UK in various testing gigs. And it was fascinating to see how the industry was evolving at that time with the arrival of the ICIP and the ISTQB qualifications, and how it started to formalize the testing world. Later on in my testing career, I started noticing that I was working more with people than with the actual software. And I started noticing certain patterns, and some of it weren't really... As a test manager, you can be the epoxy that that lubricates the wheels of a project being delivered, or you can actually be the oil that helps lubricate it. And that's where I started to notice that I wanted to grow my skill into the people area of IT instead of the technical area of IT. So then that set me on a whole journey of, I did a coaching course, I did a master's degree in management after that, and that set me on my whole coaching career and dealing with people change, dealing with organizational change. I have been doing that now probably for the last 12 years. And currently I am working outside of IT in a multinational as the European head of business transformation. So that's sort of in a nutshell my journey up to now.
Wow. That is a journey. So did I hear you right that they gave you that big project as a junior developer?
Yes, because they didn't want to do it.
But I tell you what, like that's one of those things where you think it's a burden, but it just set you on this course, didn't it?
Yeah. I've never really I've always landed back on my feet, regardless of where your career takes you. So I've been really blessed by being able to always land back on my feet. I think the longest period I've ever been out of a job in that whole career was probably 2 months, where I emigrated from the UK to back to South Africa. So, and waiting for my son to be born. So that's probably the longest I've been out of a job across all of that time. So that's quite a blessing.
So thank you for taking us on your journey. We've talked a little bit before this, and I got to know a little bit about who you are and what motivates you. You phrased it really well, and I think you're really comfortable talking about it. So can you sort of sum up what motivates you as a person? Because that segues us really nicely into the into what we're about to talk about.
So a few years ago, I did the Simon Sinek's course of Find Your Why or Find My Why. I can't remember what it was called. And it took me a long time to actually get to articulate it very, very succinctly. And effectively, my why is I like to solve problems with others so that we can make things better. And that is really where my passion lies, is to work with others to actually go and make things better. So every time I ask a question, every time I make a suggestion, it's not to put anybody down. It's all about how can we make this better? I'm really driven by what is it that we can make it better, even if it's just 1% at that moment. It's a little bit better than it was the previous day or month or whatever. So that's my big driver. And it's really handy in the coaching context. It's really handy in the business transformation context, is that big change projects has been proven. And this is a sweeping statement, just word of warning. Big change projects rarely works. The best way to approach change is through small, incremental, continuous changes. You have that compound interest at the end of the year, 1% every day. That's the only thing that actually works, in my experience. So.
And there's no bigger change than trying to change the world, is there? Do any of the examples that we talked about, you know, stand out as something that you that's really top of mind for you right now that you'd like to share with us?
Okay, so outside of IT, because this is my briefing, is that outside of IT, we need to look at, whoa, that was a thunderclap. Sorry, it was quite close. I hope you didn't hear that.
Well, we didn't, but we heard your reaction. I'm just imagining how big that must have been.
Anyway, I think there's a few examples of where I was able to use some of the tools or the techniques from Agile inside IT into outside IT. So when I engage with a problem like that, or people wanting to do something different, my go-to is to go and look at what has IT done typically to solve this. What is the technique that they've used? And then I go and I take this technique to those people and go, look, here's a technique. I don't know if it's going to work in this situation, but here is it. How do you think it will work? And then we tweak it and we adjust it until we find something that works for them. Okay, so it can be something as simple as a basic Kanban. Okay, so one of the executive meetings that I'm facilitating at the moment with the European operations of the company is that they wanted to make the minutes and the actions visible, but it doesn't work for them to put it in a Word document. So I created a little Kanban on Teams and go, how does this work for you? You capture the actions, and when the ticket is done, you close it. You have an assignee, it's visible. So every meeting we run weekly, we go to that and go, what's the outstanding actions? What else needs to be done? Simple. We've only got two columns on that Kanban. That's a very simple thing. Moving it to a little bit more complex situations, one of the areas that I found we have developed a chartering process on the back of a lot of work from previous giants in our industry. In Navavi, the company that I'm still working with in New Zealand. And we've developed a chartering process. And when we charter, we cover three main aspects. We charter for vision. Okay, so why are we doing this? It's the why. Why is this important? What value does it bring? Then we charter for team cohesion. We charter for that, making sure that we have the common practices and principles and what's our common ways of working that we agree. And then we charter for context. Is this initiative that you want to take on? What is the current context? We look at our DIRECO, so dependencies, issues, risks, assumptions, opportunities as well. And then we go, in our context, what do we have in place? What don't we have in place? What are the relationships we need to develop? What are the relationships that's in place, etc. So one of the situations I had was taking that chartering process to a group of teachers that's lost their jobs at the back end of the COVID response.
Oh, yeah.
And these people were in a very agitated state. They lost their jobs. And when you were listening to the conversations, they wanted to do something, but they couldn't get agreement about how to go about it. They had a rough idea, but it wasn't clear. So over a period of about 2 months, I took them through a basic chartering process where we spent probably a good portion of the first month just focusing on chartering for vision, at least to get them as a team to focus on a single vision.
I want to sort of be brought into that moment on what that's like for you and what it's like for them to focus so much on a vision. Because, you know, if you read the word vision on a piece of paper, it's really short and you're like, I'll just get ChatGPT to write something. But you're not just talking about some words on a page. You're talking about a lot of factors. Vision is a recipe of like motivation, outcome, trust, all these things. And so can you take us into that room a little bit and tell us about how talking about the vision and sort of digging into that, what that looked like?
The vision statement for me is a culmination of the thinking journey. It you have to invest in that thinking journey. Just having ChatGPT write, having that with you doesn't really build that ownership and build the deep tacit thinking that has gone into crafting that specific vision statement. ChatGPT can be useful to help you with a more elegant articulation of that, but you have to invest in the heart lifting of the thinking. That's where the motivation and the engagement forms. If you jump too quickly into the other things, people will lose their compass direction. You need to really bring everything back, always back to the vision. Oh, you want to do this? Your context tells me that you, when we do the chartering for context, we always go back to the vision and go, based on this context, what else do you need to do? How realistic are the gaps? How realistically can you overcome the gaps in order to achieve this vision? What else is missing from trying to achieve this mission? So what are the risks? What are the issues? What are the dependencies, the constraints, and the opportunities for you to achieve this mission? So that is quite a frustrating journey, the first probably 2 to 3 sessions you have about articulating the vision. The other part of that is it's a really interesting phenomenon about how much we can actually concentrate at a given time. So when we do the chartering, we only book 90-minute sessions day after day after day. We got to give the brain, especially the prefrontal cortex, time to go overnight, put some things in the subconscious, and then let the subconscious work on those problems. So when we do this, we really build in enough rest for the brain as well into there. Now, you can imagine when you're stepping into a room, embarking on chartering with a group of people that is already agitated, they're already in a fight, flight, or freeze state. What is it that you need to do in order to get them to focus? And it took quite a number of extra sessions for them to disengage their limbic system and engage their thinking, you know, their prefrontal cortex. Once we were there, the feedback that I got was, thank you, this is giving us clarity. This gives us a direction. So when you're at that stage, then you ask the next question. If that's the vision, what are the milestones? What are the missions? What are the key results, whatever you want to call it in that context? What are the steps that you need to do to move in that direction of the vision? And then you engage the thinking brain again. So once you're at that stage, then that's smooth. Then it runs a lot smoother. But getting to the vision, you've got to get through the storming. It is a storming phase, and you have to know how to navigate that. And people get frustrated with it. They throw their hands in the air. They go off camera and probably kick something or whatever. But that's sort of what I've experienced. I hope that answered it well enough for you.
And Aldo, was there any difference between working with these teachers and working in, you know, IT, for example, with people who maybe, you know, understand the context of agility, maybe had some experience before and have love and hate relationship with Agile or this way of working? What were some of the differences?
The first thing is the labeling of things. How do we label things? What is the way we label things? When a teacher labels something, their understanding and their context is a lot different than what an IT person may label it as. I see it even today in many other organizations, not just the one I'm working for at the moment, is something as simple as a word, call it a project, can have so many specific or can have so many different interpretations. I've had in one of my previous roles at a government organization, I used the word experiment and people just disliked me instantly. Turns out another coach before me used experiments and he was quite Machiavellian about it. And I didn't know about that history. So bringing in the word experiment triggered a whole lot of emotion without me knowing it. So that's one of the big differences, Jakub, is the way that we label things. So a lot of the discussion was about what do you actually mean when you use that word as well? So for me, that's the biggest common theme that I found.
That's really cool. Chartering is a really interesting place to start, but in my experience, I don't think I've done it to the extent that you know you describe and maybe what you guys have developed. But I do find that, particularly with new teams or new groups of people, finding some common ground that you can always go back to like that. It just makes all the other decisions that you have to make and all the other things that you have to discover together that much easier. Absolutely. The irony is that for me, and I think it's ironic based on expectation, not on reality, is that if you look at, you know, the what Agile says in terms of like values and principles, it's very delivery focused. And it's very like get something out the door quick, but but it also is very people focused as well. If you look in the values, and I think it tempers it in that way. But it is very like in organizations, in my experience, there is we'll have the conversation, we'll write it on a piece of paper, and then we'll just get into delivery, because there's that real pressure to get something out to a customer or to get feedback on something before you've had a really good center to be able to experiment from. I think I'm just saying it's interesting. I totally see the value of charting. I use it sort of my own way quite often, but it does feel instinctually opposed to what people think of, or a lot of people I've talked to think of when they think of Agile.
And that's part of the frustration that I deal with is that, we just want to get on with building code, or we just want to get on doing something. And then they find that they've lost their way 3 months or 6 months into the project. And it's like, why are we doing this again? This is stupid. It's like, well, if you sorted that out in the beginning, then you don't have to redo it. So it's really, I want to make a sweeping statement. So please throw cheese and apples and whatever at me.
Firmly... What kind of audiences do you like speak in front of that throw chairs and apples at you?
When I gave training, it was a comment when I get feedback about the training experience. It's like nobody threw a chair at me, so it's fine. coming back to those things is that the frustration of people wanting to get into the action is sometimes driven by managers that doesn't understand the value of going through, thinking through exactly what the consequences are for a specific direction that was decided or chosen. The other thing as well is that in many cases, IT people are not taken along on the thinking journey. So they get spewed, or somebody spews a vision statement at them and they go, so what? What does that mean? So the investment in the thinking journey creates a lot more ownership of whatever it is that needs to be delivered.
And so you went through this chartering process with these teachers for 2 months. What was the end result for them? So you had this basically a disenfranchised community of teachers. And at the end, how did, you know, coming together, spending the time doing the mental, you know, lifts and everything like that to figure out their vision and the context and direction, how did that help them?
Well, it gave them clarity about what they can and cannot do. That was the first thing. So when they started seeing the reality of what they could and could not do, we lost some people along the way because they then decided to go and pursue other interests that wasn't aligned with that specific initiative that they were exploring.
That's actually kind of good. That's like early discovery. Like you're freed up to pursue things you'd been holding yourself back from.
Yes, instead of committing 6 months of your life and then find out it's not working. So I think that process gave them a lot of clarity. And what I can understand is at the last session we've had, I told them, I'm here if you want to use me, but you clearly have to go think about the following things. And that was the end of it. So I think the initial process just gave them clarity about what are the options and what they could do. I was then blessed to meet another teacher that also lost her job, but she actually went about things in a different way. She started a small business to supply homeschooling support. I can't say teaching, homeschooling support, right. To people doing homeschooling in Australia and New Zealand.
Which, and for any listeners out there, if you're not familiar with homeschooling, it's a totally a thing. It happens a lot more than you think, and it has really good numbers supporting it in terms of education, socialization, a lot of the stereotypes you think about. I've got a few friends who do homeschooling. Kids have a huge group of kids that they play with. They're very socialized. They cover all the subjects. They test out of way above what most kids do in other schools. So homeschooling is totally a thing. I just want to hit that because I run into that event, you know, every occasionally, and they're like homeschooling. I was like, it's not what movies make it sound like. It's actually a totally legitimate, awesome thing that's happening in the community right now.
So she supports homeschoolers with lesson plans and ideas about how to actually enforce the learning. But she's had a background in the Waldorf system. Also a little bit of integrated project-based learning, and she was driving her whole business towards providing project-based learning services to the homeschooling kids. So one of the things that I helped her with, she's a small business owner and she just started it. She's got a recording studio. She's got this high definition camera. She's got all of these lights. It's just fantastic, the setup that she's shown me that she has. And one of the things is I took her through a chartering process to actually explore how can she make this project-based learning, this integrated learning, work in an online approach context.
Okay, what was she doing beforehand?
It was just recorded videos with the lesson plan showing how it's done, and then the parents need to make sure that the child need to go and do that and have the discussions with the child about what did you learn, etc. But the project-based learning, not all parents have the time or are patient enough with facilitating a project approach to that. And that's the service that she actually ended up providing. So I started showing her a few things on the chartering process, and she immediately connected things that she does, tools and techniques that she does with the kids when she was still giving face-to-face schooling. And then she scratched her head and go, how do we make this available online? And I showed her Miro. And I said, here is the Miro. Each child will have a Miro. You do this. And that's where a whole new business model has developed for her, is to actually project manage these project-based learning approaches for children. She's now got 13 and 14-year-olds. She's got 20 specific modules you rotate through. So it's on a cyclical basis. And each project is a month long. And it's integrated learning. So for instance, a module is about the Roman Empire. And then you get to pick a project that you would research. Maybe you want to research a catapult. And part of researching the catapult is to understand how the physics work, is to have material science, is to actually understand the history of the actual device and what significance it had on the Roman Empire's capability, etc. So it's really integrated learning. And then the kids have to prototype something like that, whatever they, wherever they choose to do that. And I've even heard of a homeschooling kid that ended up building a boat. So it's just fantastic to look at it. So she does that now. She runs it on Miro, and she charters each little project with that child. And then she just project manages it. It's up to the parents to make sure the child delivers, but they work out a delivery schedule. They have regular contact sessions, and that's effectively what she's doing with that service.
Is she like a program manager for teenage projects? I mean, it sounds amazing, but like fun projects, so not fun learning where the output and the outcome is like learning and being a better person. And
yeah, so part of that's a support that she provides is to ask those thinking questions and keep the child, make sure the child is actually delivering according to the schedule that they have agreed, etc. And it's all visible to the parents as well. So that's how she, that's a product that she provides. So I took her through the chartering, through this, to get clear about what's the vision for this service or product, what are the mission and the mission tests, etc. And she actually built it. So she started delivering that at the beginning of this year, and now it's month 7, and the people really like what she's doing.
That sounds incredible.
Well, Aldo, I wonder, you know, there are people who are listening to this and they are wondering, oh, I wish I could do stuff like this. I want to help people as well. And you know, how did you start? How other people could start? How did you find these teachers, this small business owner? How do other people can do it?
I don't want to sound flippant if I say this, so please forgive me, okay? Sometimes we need to get our heads out of our own lives and look around us.
Mm.
There are so much need, so much opportunities. We just need to be responsive that they exist.
So you were open to opportunities, is what you're saying. You were like, you're like, I'm here for it.
It was a side project for me. I did not do this full time. It was a side project, and I did not get paid much for it, but it was interesting because I could learn something.
It's aligned with your why as well.
Yes. Okay. There you go. I really did not get paid much for it, and it was about how does the chartering process work in this context? What is it that I can learn from the chartering process that we have in this context? So by the way, if you want to go have a look at it, I'm doing free marketing here for a friend.
Yes, please.
It's called functionaleducation.com. It's as easy as that. And say hi to Fran if you do speak to her.
Definitely do that. Wow. You know what I think is really great about, you know, when you do these things, I don't know if you do this on purpose or not, but you seem to choose people that are in a good place to influence other people. You know, like, so you focused on Fran, who now helps a lot of kids and in turn also their parents and their families have a better life. you know, and through focusing on teachers, they interact and uplift. That's their job, is they uplift other people. So there's this compound effect to this thing, is if I do this one good thing here, it might trickle on and do other unpredictably wonderful things as they go on.
Well, thank you for that observation. I never thought about it like that. The way that I see this is that I'm available to help if somebody wants to be helped. That's a really golden rule I follow. I've learned that the hard way in IT teams, is that you turn up, you now the new Scrum Master. They're taking bets about how long you will last, and then you go, okay, I'm the Scrum Master. You shall do this. You shall do this. You shall do this, and that doesn't win you any friends. You're just another type of slave driver. I don't know what else you want to call it.
With best intentions, I'm sure.
Yes. Where people are ready for change and they're ready to own that change, you will notice the energy is different. So I've learned the hard way not to push where people don't want to be pushed. I believe very much in a pull system, a pull situation. So when somebody is ready, they will pull me in. And one of the customers that I worked at many years ago, is the team didn't want anything to do with me for about 8 months. And then one senior developer came and asked me a question. And that's where my engagement with the team started. They literally ignored me. So
just when they were ready, but you know, oh, that's,
yeah.
Wow. So, so the message is, you help people who don't want to be helped. You are open to helping. And, from your viewpoint, there's probably a lot more opportunities than people think out there if they approach life in that way.
Yeah, I believe so. There's the hardest thing to do as an agile coach or a scrum master or a change lead or whatever you want to do it, is to go do change where people don't want you, where people don't want. Yeah. Many cases they don't like being changed. So usually it's a decision from a manager, you shall go change those people. And that doesn't work. Mm. Instead of, we need to change. What can we do together? Mm. See, it's and many of the decision makers doesn't understand that, is that they've been so conditioned by the consultancies, again sweeping statements, so please, they've been conditioned by consultancies to come in, make change at people, and then the consultancies go, and they're the ones with a target on the back. When you go into a situation where it's expected that you go and change people, I think not to take those contracts or those assignments. You work where the energy is.
Work where the energy is. I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful way to close today. You know, go with where the energy is, and also be patient, look for opportunities, yeah, and wait for the call.
Thank you very much. Aldo, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story with us.
Thank you guys for the opportunity, and good luck. It's good to have spent some time with you. Thank you.